Welcome to Radio Times. I'm Tracy Matisak, filling in for Marty Moskowain. Technology has turned telecommuting from a rare arrangement to a common practice. More people than ever are working from home, at least some of the time. So 10 years into the work-at-home phenomenon, what are the lessons we've learned? How has teleworking evolved, and what are the best practices for those whose home is also their office? We'll get some advice on how to set up your home office a little bit later, but we begin with a look at the pleasures, the pitfalls, and what we've learned about working from home. Stuart Friedman is an expert on work-life balance. He is the director of the Work-Life Integration Project at the University of Pennsylvania's Wharton School. Stuart, welcome to Radio Times.
Thank you, Tracy. Great to be here.
We're also talking with Nicholas Bloom, professor of economics at Stanford University. He recently completed a study of working from home in China. Nicholas, welcome to Radio Times.
Hello, Tracy.
So, Stuart, I'll start with you. You've been studying these trends in work-life balance. Quite a lot more people working from home today than when it first started out, and it was just a handful of people in sort of these rare arrangements, correct?
Yes, and that's largely a function of the digital revolution enabling connectivity anywhere, anytime.
Yeah, so people can work from quite literally wherever they are. I guess it's like the, I think it was a headline in Newsweek or Times some years ago. You know, the good news is you're always connected to the office, and the bad news is you're always connected to the office.
Exactly, right? Which raises the critical question of how you manage those boundaries.
Yeah.
And that's a big part of what it takes to make working from home or working, you know, outside of the traditional office space making it work for all parties is how effectively you can manage those boundaries and the skill of interruptibility, being able to move from one task to another, one relationship to another, one set of communications to another rapidly.
Yeah.
Is part of the skill that all of us are learning now in this new era.
Yeah. Do you think that overall organizations are more willing now to experiment with that, to let people work remotely than they were maybe a few years ago?
Yes, indeed, although it's certainly not universal. But the critical word in the question you just asked me, Tracy, is experiment. And I think that's a very important concept for our listeners thinking about, well, how can I get more flexibility, more opportunity to work in different places? To the extent that you can set up small experiments that are non-threatening to the people who might be resistant to your trying something new, small experiments that are bounded in time and where the intention, the conscious and explicit intention, is to make things better for the people around you, not just for yourself, you get a lot more support for trying something new.
Yeah, and you do it at first in a low-risk kind of environment. Well, that's a perfect time to bring Nicholas Bloom into our conversation because, Nick, it sounds like that's very similar to what you were looking at in China. Tell us about your experiment there.
Yes, very much. So there is a massive Chinese firm called Ctrip. That's a huge multinational travel agent. They're very much like Expedia in the U.S., and they have about 13,000 employees, of which half are in Shanghai, which is a very expensive place to have a large office, and they wanted to reduce office costs by having employees work from home. But much in line with what Stuart was saying, they were nervous about what would happen when they sent employees home, so they wanted to run an experiment. And the way they did it was actually very scientific. They asked two divisions, about 1,000 people who wanted to work from home. 500 of them signed up to work 4 days a week at home. And then amongst those that signed up, they did a lottery, and people with even birthdays, so born on the 2nd, 4th, 6th, 8th of the month, etc., got to go home. And people with odd birthdays had to stay in the office. And they did this for 9 months. And their view was the people at home may slack off, they'd be distracted by television, the cell phone, video games, etc. But they discovered at the end of the 9 months, quite amazingly, the home workers were massively more productive. They these guys were teleworkers, and they took 13% more calls. Quality was better. Their quit rates halved. Everything was good about home working, and so they were so excited about it. They were saving around $2,000 per employee per year. This firm is now rolling it out across the entire company.
So to what do you attribute that, Nick, the fact that it was so successful? What was different about the employees being at home?
Well, the two things that were different were, firstly, it's quiet. So psychologists have known for decades that it's very hard to concentrate and work effectively with noise, particularly non-repetitive noise in the background. So you can imagine you're in the office and you can hear the person next door to you arguing with the customer or, you know, gossiping about yesterday's football match or their boyfriend's breakup. And sending them home, these guys are actually just processing calls and orders much faster. So they were doing about 4% more calls per minute on the phone. They could concentrate. They didn't need to ask people to repeat themselves. So if you've ever rung up a call center and the person seems distracted at the other end or asks you to repeat yourself, it's probably because they're struggling to focus. Then the rest of the gain, about another 8 or 9%, was because the people just worked more time. Now, it's not because their shifts were different. It's because they simply started work on time and they stopped work on time and they took shorter breaks and less sick leave. So the examples we heard is people in the office were supposed to start at 9, but you know, they'd come in and say, my motorcycle broke down, therefore I arrived at 10. Or
right.
In Shanghai, it happened to snow in February 2011, and it was traffic chaos, whereas the guys at home always started basically at 9, always ended at 5, and took short lunch breaks. So they worked more effectively, and they also worked their entire shift.
Well, let me invite our listeners to call. Perhaps you are working from home right now, and if you are, we won't tell your boss that you're listening to Radio Times, but we'd love to hear some of your experiences as you have transitioned into working from home, or maybe you do that part-time. Maybe you tried it and you didn't like it at all, but we'd be interested to hear what your experience has been. It's 888-477-9499. Nicholas, I'm curious, too, because you were talking about people who worked in a call center, and so it's a very sort of task-oriented job. Have you looked at what would happen with people in different types of jobs where it's not just, you know, taking calls, but it's, you know, something a little bit more abstract? Does that play into it somehow?
Well, very much. Interestingly, if you look in the U.S. and you look across the wage distribution, you find working from home is really bunched at two ends. There's kind of lower wage jobs like call centers, which there's a lot of working from home. And then at the other end, there's a lot of intensity around management, professional jobs, much more team-based jobs. As a backdrop, I'm actually at home right now, so I guess I'm currently, well, I'm in the West Coast, so it's 7 a.m. for me, so I'm only just out of my pajamas. But
Too much information, Nicholas.
I won't go any further. Our study is clearly very relevant for call center employees and people doing, you know, IT sales, these kind of individual, not team-based jobs. I think it's very relevant. They seem to just work a lot better at home. I actually visited JetBlue out in Salt Lake City and spent a couple of days. They have almost all their operators, people that take calls, working at home, and they're incredibly good, very successful. At the other end, it's more people really motivated by their careers. You know, when I'm at home, I could slack off for the day, but I basically know I need to work. The evidence on that is harder to come by. Stuart may actually have better examples on that. Our study, I think, is very relevant to much more kind of minute-to-minute jobs. It's harder to evaluate more senior jobs where I think teamwork is clearly much more important.
So, Stuart, let's talk about that. Are there certain types of jobs, perhaps, that lend themselves better to working from home, and what have your observations been?
Well, I think Nicholas is right that, you know, in a call center, the data of your performance are very clear and measurable. And so the focus on results, which is critical, is a lot easier to do. So the statistics that he reported about the improved productivity of people working at home, it's beautiful to see that, and it's only possible because in a job like that you can, you know, you count the number of dropped calls. You can measure when people start and when they finish.
Yeah.
For most professional jobs, of course, that's not possible, and so the onus then is on the employee to figure out in a negotiation with their colleagues and their supervisors how they're going to assess results. And that's where the creativity comes in and the negotiation skill and the importance of communication and a real focus on let's talk about how this is going to work for you and for me and how we're going to assess whether or not it's indeed working.
Yeah.
So the performance indicators or the impact on performance and results is something that's going to be negotiated in a way that works for you personally and professionally in your local setting. And it's different for everyone.
Yeah.
And so the critical skill is, again, negotiation, focus on results that matter to the people around you.
Yeah. Are there certain personality types, Stuart, that maybe are better inclined to be able to work from home? I mean, I'm thinking that you can be easily distracted in that environment as well. Mm-hmm. Or do certain personalities lend themselves, or what type of person is best suited?
Yeah. There's been some research on this, some done by my colleague at Wharton, Nancy Rothbard, who's looked at the different kinds of people in terms of their preferences for either integrating or segmenting the different parts of their lives. And so there does seem to be some personality preferences. So it's good to know what your style is. Ellen Kosick has also done work in this area with the Center for Creative Leadership, and those are resources that people might want to check out to assess their own preferences.
Yeah, Nick, why did you choose China as a place to conduct this experiment?
Well, it's a strange story, but the founder of this company and their current chairman, called James Liang. This company is actually quoted on NASDAQ. It's worth about $5 billion. Decided to do a PhD at Stanford. And I was involved in a project done by the Council of Economic Advisors up in Washington on work-life balance. And James mentioned to me he was interested in experimenting with working from home. And so we decided to do this more formally and do it in a full randomization. I should say, in your comment earlier, actually, on who works well working from home, another surprising fact we found is people really can't tell until they actually try it out. So of the half the firm that decided, volunteered to go at home, after 9 months, half of them changed their mind. And what we heard frequently is, I thought it would be great. After 2 weeks, I became bored or lonely, and I wanted to go back into the office. And so it seemed to be something that, you know, a lot of people have a sense it will work or won't, but until you really have to spend day in, day out, sitting at home on your own, it's very hard to evaluate it. And so, as Stuart said, it's not only experimentation at the firm level, it seems to be actually experimentation at the individual level.
Yes.
And I spoke a while ago to this firm called Arise Virtual Solutions that's entirely home-based. They're a large firm with no offices whatsoever. And they told me a very similar story. They'd signed people up, and they had very high dropout rates initially as people would experiment, and it wouldn't work. But then once people found out it worked, they tended to stick around for a long time.
Well, the other aspect of experimentation is that you adjust. So that the initial intention for how you plan to go about working remotely might turn out to be very different than how you end up structuring your time and location. So I think another important point to keep in mind is that the concept of an experiment is that it's continually evolving in light of new information. So what's working and what's not, and what adjustments do you need to make? Do you need to close the door so that your children know that the door closed means not to enter? Or do you keep your door open? Small things like that. Perhaps you put a sign up outside of your door that indicates when you are available or not. So all these adjustments are made in light of experience.
Well, that gives us much more to talk about when we come back. We're talking about working from home and how it is a trend that has really increased over the last 10 years. And we're sort of taking stock of what we've learned in that time in terms of best practices and so forth. So we're talking about working from home when Radio Times comes right back.
Rider University supports WHYY. Rider offers information about its executive MBA program, helping professionals leverage their business experience into greater leadership roles in their organizations. Rider's next executive MBA information session is on Saturday morning, July 28th in Princeton, New Jersey. Registration is available online at rider.edu or at 609-896-5036. Rider University, preparing tomorrow's business leaders.
I'm Jesse Thorne. James Brown wasn't just the minister of the new super heavy funk. He was also the hardest working man in show business.
I think why he connected with Nixon is because he sided with that bootstrap mentality of doing it for yourself. You can't trust anybody else, and I can succeed on my own.
Another side of James Brown with biographer R.J. Smith on the next Bullseye from PRI.
Tonight at 9 on WHYY.
Olympic competition is already underway in London, but beyond the Olympic flame, some off-field controversies are already burning. We'll check in with the Barbershop Guys about some racial drama preceding the games. Oh, and yeah, we'll talk about the games, from trampoline to track. That's next time on Tell Me More from NPR News.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
Welcome back to Radio Times. I'm Tracy Matisak, filling in for Marty Moskowain. We're talking about working from home. It is a phenomenon that started probably 10 or so years ago in earnest and just has gotten bigger and bigger over the years. Some have had great success with it, others not so much. So we're talking about what we've learned, what are the best practices, and why it makes sense or doesn't make sense to work from home. We've been talking with Stuart Friedman. He's an expert on work-life balance, and he's the director of the Work-Life Integration Project at the University of Pennsylvania's Wharton School. And also with us is Nicholas Bloom, who is a professor of economics at Stanford, and he recently completed a study of working from home in China. We'd love to hear from our listeners as well. The number is 888-477-9499. Perhaps you are working from home right now, so if you are, don't say who you work for, because we don't want to get you in trouble. Perhaps you've tried working at home, it just didn't work out for you. We'd love to hear what your experiences have been, and perhaps you've got some suggestions for how to make working from home work better. So that said, we come back to our conversation. Stuart, I'm interested to hear about gender differences when it comes to working from home. I'm thinking, as a wife and mom, that for women, it could be a very attractive arrangement on one level, because when your kids have snow days, sick days, that sort of thing, you can be there to address that. Mm-hmm. I could see it being a double-edged sword, though, too, that, you know, the good news is you can be home with your kids, and the bad news is you can be home with your kids.
Right. Well, As sex roles are changing in society, there are more and more men who are, coming out, as it were, to express their interest in being more active in their role as parents in society. So I think that what we'll see in the next generation is that it's not just about women, but also about men, fathers, taking more advantage, and we're seeing that trend, more advantage of working from home so that they can fulfill their responsibilities, particularly in the professional elite, but also in the middle class, where you have more dual career, dual earner families. That being said, the examples that you just gave of pressures to respond to children's needs and do home care responsibilities, shopping, etc., those things don't disappear when you're at work. Those demands are there. So to the extent that you're able to meet them in a way that is fairly efficient in terms of, being able to shop during the day, for example, when you avoid the rush at 6 p.m. or 8 p.m., it actually makes you more efficient in getting done the things that are a part of your general set of responsibilities as a caregiver and as a home manager. And that ultimately frees up your time and attention to do work tasks when you need to. Yes. So while it might seem a kind of distraction to be doing work-related or childcare-related tasks during the day, it actually it can benefit you, because you're able to take care of those things that otherwise would be pressing on your attention, mm-hmm, and distracting you while you were at the office.
Nick, what have you seen with regard to that in your experiments? Gender differences at all, or what have you observed?
Well, we definitely saw people that were married and had kids were massively happier to work from home. I guess they definitely want to be around their children, and presumably around their husband or wives. The most interesting examples I've seen has actually been out in JetBlue. So in JetBlue, I visited a number of home workers out in Salt Lake City, and they were all women, and it offers both working from home, but also, which is kind of flexi place, but also flexi time, which they tend to go together. So they can not only work from home, but choose how they work. And that was invaluable to them. So I remember the last woman I spoke to told me she'd log on to work at 7 a.m., work until 8. At 8 o'clock, her kids woke up, so she'd log out for an hour and a half, cook them breakfast, take them into school, come back. She logged on again at 9, went till 10:30, then did her exercise class for an hour, then logged on for an hour, then had lunch. I mean, it was just amazing. She'd, as Stuart said, it fitted her life,
yes,
very much around her work. She was incredibly happy. She was very able, and the firm benefited as well, because they got someone that was, you know, basically very high quality and would otherwise not have taken the job.
Yeah, and so she figured out a way to conform the job to her life, it sounds like.
Yes, and she also had a greater sense of trust being given to her by the employer, so that she most likely feels a greater sense of commitment to the organization's goals and feels more treated as an adult who can take responsibility for organizing her time and her location in order to get things done that matter to her employer as well as to herself. So when you give people that authority to make decisions about where, when, and how to get things done, they repay that with effort and commitment.
Yeah, we're going to take a look at, if you are working from home, how best to arrange your office. We want to talk about some very practical help here. Before we do that, though, let's go to the phones right here in Philly, and we'll start with Cher. Welcome, Cher, to Radio Times.
Good morning. I'm so glad you're talking about this. I am a graphic designer. I work in Philadelphia, and I can't get the office to kind of, I mean, all of us, everyone on our team, and we're a small team, we're a startup company, we go to work and we sit in front of our computers all day just doing design work. And of the couple of times I've been able to get them to let me work from home, I was significantly more productive. I tracked my day and got through so much work, but I just can't get them to, I mean, easily we spend a salary in office space that we really don't need. We could meet at a Starbucks once a week to have a team meeting and set goals and just really kind of knock the work out. But yeah, I can't really get them to feel the value in that. I drive 30 minutes into Philly.
So what's the rationale for not letting you work at home?
I don't know. I don't think that we've never really had a discussion, but I think it's just sort of that need to, like, call me every 37 seconds or walk into the office and say, okay, where are you? You know what I mean? I think it's just that sort of need of control of the workflow, maybe. Mm.
Well, Stuart, it sounds like a cultural thing maybe in that workplace.
Well, it's also about negotiating expectations. And so one of the key parts of this program that I do that's called Total Leadership, in which people identify what matters most to them, who the most important people are in their lives at work, at home, and in the community, talk to those people about mutual expectations in terms of what they need from each other, and then they experiment with new ways of getting things done. One of the critical pieces of this is the dialogue with the people who matter in your life about what you need from each other. And it sounds like that's a missing piece here in Cher's situation, where there's probably some misunderstandings about what is needed. And when you have a conversation about, you know, what is it that you need from me most, boss, and when do you need me, and what matters most to you in terms of what I deliver to our group and our organization, and then you listen and inquire further about, tell me more about what matters most to you. When you have that kind of conversation, then you can build experiments that are based on mutual goals.
Yeah. Nick, any advice for Cher as she seeks to work from home?
I think, as Stuart said, the best way forwards is experimenting. When we were out with the firm out in China, they were astounded by how successful working from home was. In advance, they were skeptical. They tried it out, and it's turned out to be wildly positive. Interestingly, right now, linked to the news article, back in London, there's masses of experimenting going on because the Olympics has killed transport. So I was in London a few weeks back, and they've taken out many lanes in the road for Olympic traffic only.
Oh,
and it's so bad that many firms have now just asked their employees to go home for the month, and there's a kind of mass experimentation going on. Mm-hmm. For this large Chinese firm, they were wildly surprised. There wasn't much downside in the sense they tried something out. You could, you know, in Cher's office, they could pilot working from home one day a week for a month, see how it works, and go from there. Mm-hmm. If it doesn't work out, there's not much cost. If it does, it's something that can be extended in terms of days and over time.
Well, it sounds like, again, a nice low-risk way to sample it and see how it works out. And since you brought up, Nick, the Olympics and people being forced now to work from home and to give this a try, for those who are working from home, you know, you don't just necessarily break out the laptop at the kitchen table. There are ways to do this and ways not to do this. And so we've got some help for people who are thinking about setting up their home office, or maybe you've got one and you want to make it a little bit more efficient. It just helps to have an appropriate workspace. And Marilyn Zielinski-Sciardo is a freelance writer. She's also an editor who has written books on office design. Among them are New Workplaces for New Work Styles and Practical Home Office Solutions. And she's with us now to help teleworkers get the most out of their space. Marilyn, welcome to Radio Times.
Oh, good morning, Tracy. Thanks for having me on.
Well, this is going to be so helpful, I think. How important is office setup to our productivity?
Oh, I've learned through the years it's absolutely important. In my house, and I've been working at home for, decades, it feels like, I've had my office in every single room in this house, including the basement, which was the quietest. Now that I have kids, I'm upstairs, and I have to have a dedicated space. It's the tiniest room in the house, which is fine with me, but it has a door. And that's very important, although it doesn't always work because they just come barging in. But I think now they understand that when they open the door and I put my hand up, it means, go away, stop, I'm on the phone.
So, Marilyn, if you had to have sort of a checklist or some rules of thumb about the basics of what people need, if you're going to work at home, these are the things that you need to make sure you do or make sure you have, what would that be?
Right. Well, the door is number one. Number two, I would have a dedicated phone line. I did not have a dedicated phone line for my business for the longest time. And when my kids were toddlers, what do you think they did? They picked up the phone, and I used to give out my home phone number. So, of course, the nightmare stories, you know, when I was in the shower, the phone would ring. It depends, you know, how old your children are. Mine are getting a little older, so they know not to answer the office phone. But I think that's pretty much the important thing is to have that line. And I have a Magic Jack line, which doesn't cost that much, and it's beautiful for work life. And I think just a workspace where you can spread out, and you can work at the kitchen table. That's okay, you know, as long as you can think, have somewhere to think and gather your thoughts. I mean, there have been times that I've had to hold myself up in my bedroom in order to get some quiet time to actually work. But I think if you are going to telecommute and work at home, you really should have your own workspace.
Yeah. And Marilyn, I'm going to ask you this, but I would invite our other guests to chime in as well. What are the biggest mistakes people make when they try to work from home?
Oh, there are so many mistakes. They tell their friends that they're home. So, you know, the interruptions, there can be as many interruptions at home as there are in the workplace.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you turn the ringer off, and I do that. I do turn the ringer off when I'm trying to write. And I think one of the problems is that people when they work at home don't leave the house. And I think that's a huge problem. You know, you find yourself on the internet doing things, you know. You get so immersed in your work when you're writing or when you're, you know, researching, you just forget to go out. And I think that's really important to realize you have to go out. And, you know, I'm an introvert, and I really love working at home because I like the quiet time and the solo time. But there are those days that I really miss being around people.
Mm-hmm.
So I head off to, you know, my husband's office and try to get some socialization there or meet up with some friends. But I really think that people who work at home just get so caught up in their work, they forget to go out.
Yeah. Stuart, any observations on that about the pitfalls of working from home, the mistakes maybe that people make as they're setting up an office?
Well, I think that Marilyn makes a really good point about taking breaks and getting out and to be thinking about, you know, bounding your time for particular tasks, shutting off, you know, creating physical boundaries that help you to do that, you know, a door or a sign or hand signals to your kids. I think those are all very important to negotiate, to try, and to see what works and what doesn't for you and for your employer as well as for your family. The key here is to set out, try something, and then most importantly, the reason a good experiment works is if you are paying attention to exactly what's working and what's not in terms of results that matter to you and to the people around you. So what is it that your kids really need? Figure that out. And then make sure that you're satisfying that. And if it's not working, then adjust. What is it that your employer really needs? What is it that you really need? In Marilyn's case, she needed occasionally to get out and have some social interaction. Yeah. So there are no general prescriptions. It's all got to be designed locally for your environment in a way that works for you. And I think that's what part of what Nicholas was telling us about is how, you know, ultimately comes down to the psychological needs of the individual in their social context, and only they can really figure it out.
Well, and let's talk just a little bit, though, about the physical, because, Marilyn, you mentioned the need to have a door. What about a window? Is that something that's important to have just in terms of, you know, having a little change of scenery, that sort of thing, having some natural light coming in the room, any other physical things we should be thinking about?
Yes, and to quote you, there is a double-edged sword to having a window, because when they're open, you hear everything outside.
Yeah.
But make sure they're, you know, able to be closed. But yes, I think it's absolutely important, because why are you working at home? Because you love to be home and you love to look outside instead of, you know, sitting in a cubicle where there's absolutely no window. So of course, that's very important to my psychological health, at least. And to see the weather, you know, I think it's very important. The glare issue is a problem sometimes. I mean, it's a small thing, but it eventually turns large. If you place your computer in the wrong spot, then you can't see, and that sort of leads to a whole host of complications where people complain, I can't see. But yeah, windows are great, except when the lawn service is next door or the kids are out playing.
And summertime, that can be a problem for sure.
Right.
And finally, just thinking, Marilyn, about any other physical aspects. You know, typically, you know, certain type of desk, bookshelves. How to avoid clutter? Any tips you can give us on that?
Oh, I think it's hard to avoid clutter, but I think it's all individual. But I think the chair is an issue. You can go to any office supply store and just buy an ergonomic chair. I think that's critical, instead of working on a kitchen chair or a dining room chair, which will ultimately lead to problems, back problems.
Well, Marilyn, we thank you so much for just helping us think about this a little bit differently and really kind of getting down to the basics of what does it take from, you know, a physical perspective to be able to work at home as well as possible, taking into account, of course, the psychological aspects of your personality and your family's needs and all of those things. So,
You're welcome.
Thank you so much. We were talking with Marilyn Zielinski-Sciardo, who has written books on home office design, and we appreciate those tips. We want to hear from our listeners, so let's go to the phones to Philly and Margaret, and welcome Margaret to Radio Times. Hi.
Hi, Tracy. Thank you so much for doing this program. I'm a recent college graduate, and I actually took sports class a couple of years ago. When I first graduated from college, I worked in an office for the first year, and then I moved on to a company that requires me to work from home. My employers live out of state, and I recently found that I am extremely lonely. While I was in an office, I wanted to work from home, but now that I only work from home, I wish I had a team. I also feel like that people don't respect my time as much. I am constantly reminding my parents and my fiancé that I am working, and they can't ask me to run errands or to help them.
Yeah.
And I work in my fiancé's office when I can, which is much better, but it's still not the same.
Yeah.
And I guess my comment is that I think that working from home part-time isn't bad, but I've come to believe that office time and meeting time is absolutely vital. You have to have a relationship with your colleagues and your employer, and a phone relationship just is not the same.
Yeah, well, let's ask your former professor to comment on that, and then I have a question for Nick as well. Stuart, what do you say?
Hi, Margaret. I think the key here, again, is negotiating those boundaries. And perhaps you've already done this, but making clear. And it's the kind of thing that has to often be repeated. This dynamic actually plays out in my own home environment, where we're continually evolving our understandings of, you know, how do you enter or stay out of other people's space. But I think the key is to make clear, here's what I need and here's why it's important, not just to me, honey, but to you, so that they see it as something that's beneficial to them.
We are talking about working from home, and we have much more to discuss when Radio Times comes right back.
He was an outsider. He challenged the art world by collecting the new masters and giving them a home. More Cézanne than the Louvre, and the world's largest collection of Renoir. Dr. Albert Barnes and his grand experiment in education, the Barnes Collection, the WHYY original production, proud to be part of the PBS Arts Summer Festival. The Barnes Collection, August 3rd at 9 on WHYY-TV. See a preview at whyy.org/barnes.
When Columbus crossed the Atlantic, it completely altered the biosphere of the Americas by bringing foreign plants and animals, as well as infectious diseases, to the New World. On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Charles Mann, author of 1493, Uncovering the New World Columbus Created. It's just been published in paperback. Join us.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
I'm Robin Young. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. Penn State students are devastated by the NCAA penalties against them, but author Taylor Branch says they are meaningless. Also, another author says his kids might as well be called Generation Hot. He's calling on parents to do something about climate change. That's Public Radio's Daily Digest of News and Culture here and now.
Today at noon on WHYY.
You're listening to Radio Times on WHYY. I'm Tracy Matisak, filling in for Marty Moskowain, talking about working from home, which is quite a big subject. More and more people are trying it to see whether it works for them. More and more people are working from home, at least some of the time. We've been talking with Stuart Friedman, who is professor of management and director of the Work-Life Integration Project at Wharton School of the University of Pennsylvania. He's also the author of Total Leadership, Be a Better Leader, Have a Richer Life. And joining us as well from London is Nicholas Bloom, or from the West Coast, I should say, is Nicholas Bloom, who is professor of economics at Stanford. And he recently completed a study of working from home in China and has also done some work with some other companies. We want to invite our listeners, if you're working from home or not, but you've got a story to share about your experience, we'd love to hear from you as well, at 888-477-9499. And Nicholas, I'm curious to know, our last caller talked about the loneliness that she didn't expect in working from home. I want to talk about some of the other downsides of working from home. Concerns perhaps that, you know, not being visible in the office could, you know, come at a price of maybe not being promoted as quickly, that sort of thing. What are some of the drawbacks for people who want to work from home, but, you know, there maybe is a reason to be in the office every now and then?
Yes, promotion's a big issue, actually. People talk a lot about the need to have face time in the office to be seen, to be trusted, to be promoted. We saw that out in China. So what happened was the people that went home, on average, their promotion outcome from employees up to team leaders was very similar to the people in the office. But there was two offsetting effects. One is they worked much more effectively at home, so they were making about 13% more calls, and that should have led them to be promoted much more quickly. But on the other side, they were, in a sense, discriminated against because they weren't around. And so net-net, you find they're more productive, but they're not getting promoted as fast as that would guarantee. And so I think the first issue is it's certainly true when you're out of the office, it makes it harder to get promoted. I think one of the solutions, and related to what Margaret was talking about on loneliness, is very few people work at home entirely full-time. It's right. much more common to work at home, as I do, for example, a couple of days a week and go into the office 3 days a week. And for those two days a week, it feels like an oasis of quiet to get home. And so I really enjoy it rather than feeling lonely. The other thing I should say that people at work at home is worth thinking about, and related to what Marilyn's talking about earlier, is exercise. So if you stay at home all day and you never go out, you don't really have that commute into the office. There's typically less walking around the office. One of the other important tips you often hear is maybe take 20 minutes at lunchtime, go out, walk around, clear your head, or go for a jog, whatever kind of keeps you sane. Make sure you don't turn into that stereotypical couch potato if you spend day in, day out working at home.
Yeah, and that creates a whole other set of problems for sure. How about salary, Nick? Have you noticed, is there a difference, you know, for people who work at home, let's say, more often than not? Have you seen any effects on salary?
Interestingly, so there's a study by a guy called Gerald Ottinger, and he's been looking at data in the U.S. going back until the 1980s. And what you saw is back in the 1980s, people working from home, once you control for their age and their experience and their gender, were typically paid about 30% less than people working in the office. So you basically had to take a huge pay cut to work at home in the 1980s and 90s. But by 2010, that pay cut had disappeared. And what's to be happening is computers and IT have made it a lot easier to work from home, so you're so much more productive that there's no longer any salary discount. And in fact, for the people we looked at in China, the guys working at home, because they were more productive, are actually getting paid more. So, you know, all else equal, you're paid the same. But actually, if you produce more, you can actually boost your salary by being at home.
Yeah, well, once you take the commute out of the mix and the associated expenses, too, you're saving money. So let's go back to the phones to Upper Black Eddie and Terry. Welcome, Terry, to Radio Times.
Hi, thank you. It's a terrific show today. I was wondering if there is evidence that indicates whether a boss is more likely to allow an employee to work from home based on that boss's age or gender. And the question comes from a very successful stint my husband had working at home several days a week. His boss was a young man, very technologically savvy. He got a new boss, a woman, you know, in her 50s or 60s, who put an end to the work at home and said, I really like the FaceTime. And I wondered, women, more touchy-feely, we think of ourselves as being more about communication sometimes than men. Is there a gender difference in which boss is likely to let someone work from home, gender and age?
Interesting question. Let's see. Nick, have you seen anything like that in your research?
Well, it's interesting Terry raises that. We a couple of years ago, we surveyed around 700 firms across Europe and the U.S., and in fact, we found the reverse. And I tell you what we found, and then we can discuss your example, which is in firms with more women in management, you find they're much more likely to let employees work from home. They're also more likely to have job sharing, longer maternity leave, actually longer paternity leave as well. So they tend to treat their employees better. It was hard to tell for us whether it's, you know, women are attracted to become managers in firms that are nicer to their employees, or once they get into the position of power, they drive it through. Interestingly, you don't see anything with women in non-management. So it really requires women to be in positions of management to really drive change. So in general, you tend to see that actually women, if you want to work from home, you're more likely to have success in a company with a female manager. And we kind of assume this because women are typically, because they're the primary child carers, enjoy those kind of things more, and that's what helps them drive through in the firm themselves. We didn't look at age, and it's a great question. And given that working from home has been rising so rapidly, and people tend to go with things they're comfortable with, I would assume the best bet is probably young female managers for allowing working from home.
Well, and age is an interesting question. Stuart, I'm wondering, as we think about, you know, the millennials, right, who always are connected in some way through their iPad or their phone or their laptop, and they work quite literally from anywhere, have you seen any differences when you look at, you know, say a middle-aged manager who feels like, I can't manage people I can't see, right, as opposed to now this younger group of workers coming up who are already used to working from any place?
Or doing everything virtually, or so much of their communication life is mediated through some kind of screen or some other media than face-to-face communication. So I think age is a huge factor, and part of what's needed to make it work in your situation is education. And again, experimentation helps with that. Yeah. So if you're someone of my generation, around 60, and you've been managing people for a long time, and you're not very facile with the current digital tools that are available for communication, including now video chatting and Skype, and now the advent of telepresence and other tools that make distance disappear because you feel like you're in the room. If you don't have experience with that, and what you know is that trust builds when I can see you, I can smell you, I can see all the body language through which so much of communication happens, unless I get educated about how we can really get our work done and I can trust you through small experiments that help me to learn, then it's going to be tougher. So generally speaking, younger people are going to be a lot easier as managers and as coworkers in terms of working from a distance.
Yeah. Let's go to Sellersville next. And Christine, welcome, Christine, to Radio Times.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I guess it's more so a comment. I worked from 2003 to 2006, 4 days a week at home and one day in the office. And when I first started doing that, I was given the advice to avoid using the term working from home and to instead always use the term working remotely out of concern for the perception of my colleagues in terms of you know, just whether or not I would be productive or that sort of thing, just the things we've been talking about. And I'm wondering if that's something that you would still advise, or is, I know, I'm noticing in this conversation, working from home is used pretty frequently, and I'm wondering, is that something worth still avoiding, or does it even matter anymore?
Oh, interesting point.
Yeah, still I think to the extent that it connotes that you're doing other stuff rather than focusing on that which matters to me in the office, then yeah, the term home ought to be avoided. And that you ought to be attending, you know, it's always about what am I contributing to our company, to our business, to our organization, and every communication, every way in which you signal that what you're doing is to make you more useful to the company. You're doing this piece of work in another location so that you can be more focused and attentive to the task at hand. That's what Nicholas found in China, and that's what we find in the United States. When we looked at people doing experiments with different ways of getting things done and looked at how much time and attention they spent on their work, it actually went down in terms of their total amount of time and attention spent on work. There was a reduction in their psychological attention to work, but their performance improved. So how does that make sense? Well, because they were spending more time taking care of the other things that matter to them in their homes, in their families, in their communities, and for themselves personally, like exercise or spiritual activities. And when you take care of the other parts that matter to you, when you are working, you're more productive. You're more focused, and most importantly, you're less distracted, so you produce better work.
Well, and it is interesting, just the language that, you know, maybe for many, working from home, you know, conjures up images of people in their jammies at the desk. And so there's a credibility issue there, I suppose.
I was going to say, I emphasized very much with Christine when I was living back in London about a decade ago. Whenever I told my friends I was working from home, they'd say, aha, you're shirking from home.
Right.
And, you know, I actually did an experiment about a few months ago, and I went into Google. And if you go to Google Images and you type in the words working from home, you come up with about 30 images, and at least 15 of them are naked people. And there's a whole bunch of Homer Simpson cartoons. I mean, they are not...
Now everybody's doing that search.
There's not a positive set of images. So with Christine, I ended up adopting the word telecommuting, which sounded more technically savvy and modern, and I share. Working remotely is also being labeled remotely working. So telecommuting seemed to be the easiest.
That's and a good one.
Meanwhile, people will be crashing Google servers looking for those for those pictures. We'll go to Southampton next, and Susan. Welcome, Susan, to Radio Times.
Hello.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. Your comment
can
or
you
question?
Hear me?
Yep, we sure can.
Okay, I can. Couldn't hear you very well. I guess I have more comments than anything. I started working from home in 1992 and spent 7 years working from home with a child in the house. And at that time, you know, technology wasn't where it is today, and it was working from home. And, you know, the jammies comments came up a lot, and also when the child needed to be attended to, you know, I've got comments like, well, what would she do if you had a real job? Yeah, and now I spent 14 years working back in the office again, and now I have just moved here, so I began working remotely again here about a month ago, and I am amazed at how much I can get done.
Wow.
I have no distractions, and it's something that always bothered me working in the office is listening to the gossip and why am I working so hard and everybody else is just chatting. And so I think it's tremendous, but I do now use the term working remotely, which now I know is remotely working, so I may have to rethink that.
Well, it sounds like it's working well thus far. So
it's really working well, and I agree with the gal that said you have to get out. You have to, you know, I make it a practice to make sure that I get up, I get showered, I get dressed, and, you know, make sure that I go through my day not in my jammies.
Yeah. Well, and thank you for that, Susan, because you kind of brought us to a great place, I think, to end our program with, and that is to ask both Stuart and Nicholas to give us some best practices, some best ideas for people who want to telecommute. They want to do it well. They want to be productive with it. What do they need to know? Stuart, I'll start with you.
Well, just in brief, I think the key is to start small and not try to take on too much at once. Make sure that you know what it is that you are trying to achieve by having a flexible work arrangement, so and that your boss and coworkers and clients and customers, the people who count on you, that they understand why it is that you're doing this and that your intention is to make things better for them. What you're going for is a win all the way around. And then to collect data that allows you then to say after a month or so, here, look how things are better now.
Yeah.
And if not, then try to adjust. So you go to your boss and say, for the next few weeks, what I'd like to try is being at home on Thursday afternoons, because I think as a result of that, I'm going to be more focused, more attentive, and actually produce better results for you. Can we try that for a few weeks? And if it doesn't work, we'll go back to the way things were. We'll try something different.
Yeah.
And then you get ideas. Then you get the communication that builds trust and that gives you information to let you know what's working, what's not, and what continual adjustments you need to make. So to boil it down, it's know what's important to the people around you, start small, collect data, and then continue to adjust.
And Nicholas Bloom, in our last 60 seconds, what's your advice?
Fantastic points by Stuart. The only things I'd add really is the focus on quiet space. Typically, most firms are quiet, have your own bedroom or your own room to work at home. And the other, as mentioned earlier, is really demarcate. So, Ray, now I'm at home right now, and I had to make sure my wife stopped my kids coming running into the room. It needs to be clear when you're working at home, you really are working at home rather than some kind of part-time help.
Yes, children don't tend to observe those boundaries very well. At least that's been my experience.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to thank both of you for being with us. Stuart Friedman is a professor of management and director of the Work-Life Integration Project at the Wharton School, University of Penn. Nicholas Bloom is professor of economics at Stanford University. He's done much research on this telecommuting topic, particularly really interesting study out of China. Thanks to both of you for being with us on Radio Times.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Great talking with you both. I'm Tracy Matisak, filling in for Marty Moscowane, and you have been listening to Radio Times on WHYY.